Welcome to 21. I'm Drew Lasker. I'm a family man, professional athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21 and 21 Media. Yvonne Harris and I have teamed up and created this podcast to explore the life lessons that come along with being an athlete. Why 21? It's my jersey number and a key part to my great fortune and career. So it seems fitting for this podcast.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Harris. I'm a proud boy mom and an advocate for efforts that improve the lives of women and children. Experiencing success as an athlete or in any facet of life does not happen by accident. There must be clarity, intention, and the willingness to pivot. Our guests on 21 share their journeys in ways that cause you to reflect, assess, and then take action. We are so thankful for the stories shared on this podcast because Drew and I know their wisdom shortens someone else's path to success. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome to 21, and as you guys know, Yvonne and I are trying to land our feet in this media space. So we have the perfect guest today that can provide us with some guidance and some inspiration, as she's the news anchor for KHOU, content producer, and a staple in the Houston community. Today, we welcome to the show, Mia Gradney. Mia, welcome to 21.
Hello there. It's so wonderful to be with you. And what a warm welcome. Thank you for that. I'm flattered and I'm also blushing.
Well, we're glad you're here, Mia. Thank you so much for your time today. I think this will be the best part of our day, just spending these few moments with you. So thank you again.
Oh, so kind. Thank you, Yvonne.
And since we have you on the other side, because I know you're probably used to being in our seat, we're going to start off the show with a cool game we call 21 Questions with 21. So we're going to throw you right into the hot seat. So I hope you're ready.
Let's do it. Yes.
All right. First question. Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Oh my gosh. Whataburger.
Nike.
Always.
Nike or Adidas?
Nike.
When you're unwinding, beer or tequila?
Ooh, tequila.
Beach or mountains?
Beach, always.
Tupac or Biggie?
Tupac. Went to the concert.
Jordan or LeBron?
Jordan.
Texans or Cowboys?
For real? Houston Texans, despite everything.
Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
Oh, that's almost not fair. Chick-fil-A. I ate it all throughout my pregnancy years ago. Chick-fil-A.
Vegas or Miami?
Miami.
IHOP or Waffle House?
Waffle House.
East Coast or West Coast?
West Coast, baby.
Early bird or night owl?
Night owl. I do the nightly news, everybody.
That is true. Grilled or fried?
Grilled.
Car or truck?
Car, fast car.
Bluebell or Haagen-Dazs?
Bluebell.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Xbox or PlayStation?
PlayStation.
Dishes or laundry?
Dishes.
City or country?
Country.
And finally, when you want a chance to unwind after a long, hard week, day, month, you going with a club or a house party?
A house party.
Mia, you are now off the hot seat.
Shoo! I think I survived.
Thanks for playing, Mia. That was fun.
All right. So before we dive in, Mia, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a proud native Houstonian. My parents hail from Louisiana and Texas, so I have enjoyed the best of both worlds growing up, and even to this day, I love my Creole food, and then I love my good old-fashioned Texas Southern food as well, too. I went to college at Sam Houston State University, so I didn't travel too far from home. I studied radio, television, and film while I was there. When I was younger, I aspired to be an actress, but I just didn't have the best acting chops, but I had no problem communicating with people and being in front of people and telling stories, which is essentially what I do every day now, whether the story is 20 seconds, 30 seconds, or 30 minutes long. I'm married to my college sweetheart. We now have a teenage daughter together, a Boston Terrier dog. I think you guys already figured out I love the beach. I really love water. So whether it's a river, a lake, or a beach, that's also why I said country, because I love myself a river or lake as well. I'm big on the outdoors. I'm big on trying to treat myself right when it comes to being outside and exercising and living a good life.
Well, Mia, I hear your interest in acting, and you are such a powerful and prolific storyteller. And in our community, you also too tell the stories that matter. And I know we're going to spend some time talking about that, but let me ask you a question about sports. Did you play sports growing up at all? Any interest in that?
So, you know, it's really interesting because everyone assumes I was this athlete since age two, because I am very athletic and I'm competitive and I love to be outdoors. However, I had a very girly mom. She entered me in dance as soon as I could walk, and I really excelled at that. I did competition dance until I was in high school, and it really consumed my time. You know, I finished school every day. I'd go home, I do my homework. I was at the dance studio at least 4 days a week. On the weekends, we were at competition. I would kind of ask about sports. I have brothers, cousins in my family are guys. So everybody played football growing up. Like, that was just basic. Like, that was just the norm. Football and then basketball as well. So I always had an interest. My father spent every single Sunday watching football from the beginning of the day into the evening. Ask us what we do around here. It's the same thing. So I've always enjoyed sports, but early on, I really was a dancer. It wasn't until high school where the soccer coach of all sports, and soccer wasn't as big back then as it is now, asked me to come try out for the soccer team. And I had really kind of eased back on dance. I was working when I wasn't in school as well, so I was really focused on that. And I just tried out for the soccer team. I made the varsity team. I started playing. I guess, you know, I was good with my feet because I had danced for so many years and I had some speed too. But, you know, it's interesting. If I had to go back, I wish I would have been exposed to more than just dance, right? So my daughter has done it all, right? We always try and correct things with our children. I've exposed my daughter to everything because I wanted to see where her interests were and what she really enjoyed.
Well, I think of competitive dance as like a sport. Drew, do you agree?
I totally agree.
Yeah. Oh, let me tell you, it is. It is serious and it is intense. And I, even when I went to college my first year, I was in dance there as well. But, you know, I think it just came to a point in time where I was ready to move on. And interestingly, I found myself in the gym more on campus. I was working out, I was running. So I felt like, you know, my athleticism just transitioned as I matured as well too. I was ready to like leave the tutu behind and just do something different.
Well, let's go back to what sounded like it could be a lesson moment, Mia, for others. You started out with acting. You had the acting bug. Didn't quite pan out for you, but it parlayed you into something else. You stuck with it and it sparked an interest in storytelling. So now help us follow that connection to broadcasting and what you love to do even today.
So there's a really special story here. Mrs. Green was my theater arts teacher in high school. I attended Spring High School here in the Houston area. She was my theater arts teacher. She was my oral interpretation coach. I competed in oral interpretation. And I would try out for plays at school, and I would get just these minimal roles. Like, I remember being cast as the French maid in some play, and I'm so offended by that. Like, I've been that girl since the very beginning. Like, I don't want to just be the cute one in the maid's costume and show up and say a few lines. And so I asked her, you know, one day, I think we were prepping for an oral interpretation competition, And I really was serious about being an actress when I was a little girl. That's what I would want to do. I put on shows in my parents' entryway, even without an audience. My parents had a marble floor in their entryway, and I put on my tap shoes, and my mom would go crazy. She'd be like, "You're stomping up the floor." But I'd do an intro and a monologue, and, you know, just off the top of my brain. And I always wanted to act. So one day after school, I said to Mrs. Green, like, "You know, I never get cast in one of the lead roles. And, you know, I want to go off to Hollywood and I'm going to act." And she looked at me and she said, "Mia, my dear, you are not a good actress." And when I tell people this story, it's interesting. Some people will say, "Oh my gosh, a teacher said that to you?" And I was like, well, one, she said it out of love. And, you know, I feel like that's the thing. We have to be real with our kids sometimes and tell them where their weaknesses are and where their strengths are. And it's more how she followed up the conversation. She said, "You're not the most convincing actress. You're not the best." She said, "But what you are is an amazing communicator and a wonderful storyteller. You have no problem getting up before people, remembering the details, giving them a vivid picture of what happened or what could happen. And you should consider a career in broadcast journalism." And at age 16, you know, I knew there was the news, but I didn't necessarily know what broadcast journalism meant. So I was, you know, in my Valley Girl voice kind of back then, I was like, "Broadcast journalism, what's that?" And she said, "The people who were on the news and on TV." Now, the part that stood out when she said that was the people on TV. So I was like, okay, well, that sounds good. I can still be on TV. That's like acting. So I just fully embraced it and decided, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And I started paying more attention to the news. My parents were very much news connoisseurs growing up. They were very much about knowing what's going on in your local community, your greater community, and in the world. And especially as a woman of color, like, my parents never wanted me to go somewhere and not be able to speak to something or be embarrassed. My father was the first teacher in the Lean In movement. Like, my dad was always like, "Grab the first chair, because you're a woman, they're going to expect you not to be as smart, but you're going to surprise them." So I just started watching the news, and I decided I was going to seek out the best university for broadcast journalism. And I even had a full circle moment. I appeared in an episode of Reba and the Gilmore Girls through my work in news. I used to cover entertainment, and I used to do set visits, and I traveled the world doing this as well too, because a lot of the networks tape in Canada, obviously out in California, but even Wilmington, North Carolina, and they would ask for extras for speaking roles, and I would volunteer. And the interesting thing about that, it was so much fun. However, I was like, oh my gosh, I made the right choice. I cannot feed someone the same line 50 times in one take. Like, I literally had to sit in one scene and do that same take because they were listening for ambient noise or whatever it may be, you know, little things that would change the environment. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm used to one and done, like, it being live. So I think God led me to the right path at an early age. And that's how I ended up in broadcast journalism.
Well, but your willingness to follow the intended path is what's so important. But speak to our student listeners, Mia, and walk us through the steps of, okay, you discovered your passion, you had great counseling from Mrs. Green, but how did you navigate the college choice? How did you settle on Sam Houston State?
So for me, I did really well in school, very well, and I got accepted to several universities. Remember I said I was busy working. I don't remember the name of the class, but Jan Hargrave, who was a wonderful communicator herself as well, used to be a teacher as well part-time. She teaches the art of body language now. She's been on TV. She's a phenomenal woman. You guys should have her on, by the way. But I took a business class with her, and I really valued working hard. And there was a part of me, I always wanted to be the businesswoman as well. And so I worked while I was in school. I think universities really appreciated that. you know, when I wrote my letter to apply to those universities, you know, I talked about the things that I had done, that I had danced, that I had worked, that I had given back, whether it was at my church or with other volunteer opportunities. And when I looked at universities, I really looked to see like who was the absolute best in broadcast journalism. And I visited the University of Texas. I visited Texas A&M. My whole graduating class, I joke, everyone either went to A&M or UT, like everyone. And I got accepted to both. But when I looked at the programs and the best of the best for broadcast journalism, I really did my research and I found that San Houston State University, although it was a smaller school, it was an exemplary school for broadcast journalism. I mean, I'm a product of the Dan Rather School of Communications, a storied journalist with such a great career and history. And so for me, that was very important. To be honest, it was also close to home. I love my parents. It was nice to know that mom and dad were right around the corner. One of my brothers attended Sam Houston State University as well. And I just, I liked it. I liked that as soon as you got to the university your freshman year, they were putting you in the studio. They were having you produce content. And I liked that hands-on. I've always been a worker, so I always want to dive into it and work. And those were really things that were important to me. I tried not to just look at these big schools with the big names. And really, more importantly, I decided to go my own path. I decided to venture out and not go to the schools that all my friends were going to, because I was looking at what was the best for me. And I think that's really important. I think a lot of young people get set in their mind, you know, I'm going to play basketball only for this school, starting at a very, very early age. I mean, my daughter will tell you, I'm playing volleyball at UCLA, right? And the mom likes to do a reality check and be like, do you know how competitive your sport is? Do you remember that tournament we just went to? And so I think it's really important to be flexible and open to all the different possibilities, everything from community college, because not everyone has the grades. Some students are considered special education. You know, you may not get accepted to the university you want to go to, the four-year university, but there's a path and a way, and your way is different from everyone else's and should be unique to you and make you comfortable and make you feel good and make you feel like you can excel.
The road less traveled.
That's some amazing advice, because a lot of times here on 21, we get a lot of athletes, college athletes, and when they're making that decision of what school to choose, most of the time it comes down to prestige, or there's a lot of other people pulling at them, telling them where they should go. And ultimately, we've had guests on here who ended up transferring because they realized that the school wasn't necessarily for them. So that's some great advice. But again, a lot of times the guests that we get on here, once they get to that point of where, you know, they're about to graduate, they realize that they're not quite good enough to make it, you know, to the professional ranks, then, you know, there's a crossroad there. And for you, it seems that you've already had it kind of lined up of, or your mind made up of exactly what direction you wanted to go in. So just talk us a little bit about your career journey post-college.
Right. So I've always been a goal-oriented person. That's just me. Like, okay, what is it that I want to do? Where am I going to go? How do I get there? What type of work do I need to put in? So I was blessed that at Sam Houston State University, a lot of my professors within the radio, television, and film department had worked in the industry. So they were on the second journey of their career as professors. And Mr. Spurlock was my news script writing professor, like script writing one, advanced script writing for news. I know I'm not getting the technical name for the class right, but it was so funny. I'll never forget. He was like, if you're in this to make money, wrong place to be. I remember he wrote down like what his income was the very first year in his field. And I was like, oh my gosh, what have I done? What am I thinking? And he wrote that down, but he said, that's starting. And many of you will find yourselves exiting this business within the first 6 months when you can't get a job. Because there's only so many positions on air at every station. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be on air. So I just thought, okay, all right, well, I'm going to have to get that first job. I have to work really hard. And then I'm just going to have to keep plotting my path. So when I was in college, I got an internship at my competitor now, at one of my competitors. And it was through the great program at Sam Houston State that I really got that internship. They would ask for student candidates for the internship, and my name was submitted, and I gave my application. And I remember when I went for the internship, the very first day, they gave us kind of like a pop quiz of TV terminology. And I remember I was there with students from Princeton, from UT, from all these prestigious universities. And I remember I was the only one that could answer every single question. Wow. And I've always had this thing, I'm competitive, but I love being like, oh, you think I'm the underdog, or you might think I'm better. Let me show you. So that kind of just really inspired me and lit my fire, and I embraced everything. When I got that internship, I actually was going early in the morning, at like 2:30 in the morning. I would drive from Huntsville, Texas, all the way to the station in Houston. I would intern their morning show. Then I would leave. I would come back to class in Huntsville. Then I'd get back in my car, and then I'd drive to the Woodlands to go to work. And I did this, and I never thought anything of it. When I tell kids now what I did, they're like, oh my gosh, how did you manage your time? How did you do this? Oh, and I forgot to mention that I volunteered as well. I mentored at Huntsville Elementary School.
My.
So it's all about time management, but that's a whole other discussion. And it was through that, at the end of the internship, one of the executive producers, she sat me down and she said, I did great. And she said, I want to offer you a job. I was so confused. I was like, offer me a job, a paid job? Because this was back when internships were not paid either. And I was in shock, because remember, the professor said, you're not going to get like a job. You may not get a job for a year in this business. And it wasn't an on-air job. It was a production assistant writing job. But she said, the reason why I'm giving you this job is because I can't remember when we've had an intern who would show up at 3 o'clock in the morning and show up on the days that we decided you were going to intern, to show up consistently through flooding, through storms. And I know you have your own thing going on. So she offered me a job based on just my dedication and for showing up. I always tell my daughter, it's about showing up and the attitude, like just show up, always show up. You know, there's not a day that I tell her, I never call in sick to work. Like they joke, like my leg would have to be cut off for someone, for me to call in sick to work. I don't do it. I feel like you gain so much just by showing up. So that started my journey. While I was there, I worked on a resume tape, a demo tape to send to other stations. I really wanted to stay close to home. Again, I love my family. You know, I loved my boyfriend at the time, who was based here in Houston. And I decided, oh, Victoria, Texas. That's a good market, and they cover a large area, and it's a small market, so maybe I could get a job there. I sent my materials there. The anchor, the morning anchor at the station here in Houston, called Victoria, Texas, and told them how hard I worked and the potential that I had, all just from, once again, me just showing up with an attitude every day, a great attitude. And I was offered a job. Like, I drove down to Victoria thinking like, oh well, I'll just give it a try. And they offered me a job that day. And I worked in Victoria, and I did everything. I was a one-woman band there. I shot all the video myself. I think I fired up the live truck as well, too. And I anchored news. I did some fill-in sports because I like sports. I'm no sports expert. I always tell everyone that. Like, I'm not a sports analyst. Don't ask me to call color, but I'm a fan. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to give sports a try too. So I would fill in as well there. The only thing I didn't do was weather. And then I stayed in Victoria, Texas for about a year. I figured, where can I go next? My family, I have some family in Liberty County, and one of my aunts, her boyfriend had a good relationship with the station in Beaumont. And I went to Beaumont and I applied there. The news director there gave me a test, and I share these stories because people are always watching And I'll try and make it quick. See, this is what happens when you get someone who talks for a living on, right? Hey,
it's all good. This is what this is for. This is your show. Go ahead.
But this is really powerful. People are always watching your every move. So I went down for the interview in Beaumont, which was a considerably bigger market from Victoria, still close to Houston. So I was like, oh gosh, I got to nail this. This is my shot. And I did the interview and the news director said, can you step out of my office for a minute? I have to take some calls. And you know, when he said that, of course I said, yes, sir, no problem. I'll see myself right out of the office. Don't worry about me. You do exactly what you need. But I thought to myself, like, calls? Like, how long am I going to be out there? So I started walking around the newsroom and started introducing myself to people. I'd ask people if, you know, I could watch over them for just a second, be a fly on the wall. Some people would be short because they were busy trying to do their work. No problem. I would move on. Other people were open and friendly. And I met one of my very best friends in life. He's like my brother there. It was the weekend sports anchor, Jorge Vargas. And he and I visited for a significant amount of time. I must have been out in that newsroom for an hour, just floating around, finding my way. I never sat down in a chair to myself. And the news director was like, okay, you can come back in my office. And I'll never forget, he just had this look on his face. He was a very straight-faced guy, but he had this look on his face of kind of curiosity. So he called me the next day and he offered me the job. Because he said, well, not only did you pass my test, you blew it out of the water, kid. People came to me and said, if I didn't hire you, I'd be foolish. He sent me out of his office to see what I would do with that time. Mm. And I made the most of the time, right? I really just did what I do. It's my natural nature to ask people, you know, how they're doing, what are they doing? You know, when the people at the grocery store ask you, like, hey, how's your day going? Like, I give them a full story and then turn around and then interview them. Like, well, what's been going on? Has it been busy in here? You know, that type of thing. So I share that because it's so important for people to know, and especially young people to know, that people are always watching your actions and what you do with your time and how you act around others and treat others. And you know, did I show some talent that early on in my career on my demo tape? Yes. But I think I showed to him that I was not afraid to engage with people, to listen to people, to get to know people as well. All right, from Beaumont, then I landed myself in Houston. Once again, all based more so on my reputation. Jorge came to Houston at the CW, which was then the WB. He was given the sports director role. And the news director had like one more reporter position. He said, hey, you know anybody I should talk to? Jorge had a lot of connections here in Houston. He had worked in production for years. And he said, yeah, he goes, if there's one person you need to talk to, her name is Mia Gradney. And he called, the news director did, had me in and offered me a job that day after we visited.
Amazing.
It's pretty amazing. It seems fairy tale like to me.
Yeah, but that's the thing that I love about this show is that, you know, we have so many guests on here, so many successful guests like yourself, but from, you know, the worldview, people who see Mia Gradney, they say, oh, she's on TV, she's doing this, doing that. But they don't see what you've done to get to this point. They don't see the hard work from driving to Woodlands across town every single day, 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, and so, you know, that's so inspiring. And one other life lesson that I picked up listening to your story, specifically with Jorge, is about those relationships and about how you treat people, because it goes a long way. You know, your character is everything. So, but as we pivot, you know, we're in a space today that.
Oh, true. One thing, because this is really important, because I think especially for a lot of our children who come from communities that aren't based in networking, right? Because I heard a lot about like, oh, it's all about who you know and networking. And I think in young people's minds, and especially in some of our children who come from underserved communities, you think to yourself, well, I don't know anybody important. I don't know anybody famous. I don't know anybody with a whole lot of money. That's not what networking is about. You can get out there and volunteer. and someone is impressed with your dedication and commitment to serving others, they recognize that, they tell someone else. So I don't want someone to ever think, because of where I come from, I can't network per se. Networking is everywhere you go.
Right. And you make a great point. And, you know, we all have heard that saying about, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. But I take that a step further, picking up on your point. It's not about who you know, but it's about who knows you. And how do people get to know you? By putting yourself out there, by volunteering, by showing up. And, you know, over time, people start to ask questions like, who is this girl that's always here? You know, so that's what it's about for our listeners out there. But again, as we pivot, we're in a space right now where the word diversity and inclusion is become a hot topic. And from a diversity and inclusion lens, how has the media industry changed since you started to now?
Well, the media industry definitely is seeing and seeking out more players at the decision table. And within news, that's in the editorial process. You know, at the end of the day, we do have to decide what makes air and what doesn't make air. But for a long time, those people who made those decisions all looked the same. And for myself, even early on in my career, before this really became a large discussion among a diverse group of people, meaning white counterparts thinking about being diverse and inclusive, I was seeking out that role. I wanted to be someone who made decisions. It used to upset me as an African American that every single time we were on the news, it just seemed like it was a mugshot, it was a crime, or we were a victim of a crime. We were crying, who we were seeking out in the neighborhoods to talk to weren't always the best representation. And I just felt like, even from what I did, when I would go out and do a story, I'm like, you know, I'm going to seek out the best person to represent this neighborhood, even if it was just a crime story, so people would listen, so people wouldn't necessarily just cast off that story or that community. You know, I'm big in us trying to make sure that when we do stories, and like I said, this has been from early on in my career, that, you know, if we're going out to talk to a stay-at-home mom, maybe we try and find an African-American stay-at-home mom. There are these people. I just wanted myself individually to be able to broaden the picture and the perspective, because it's so true. Everything is so visual, what we retain. And I just think about those images that you constantly see. I want there to be a mix of positivity there. You know, I come from a family mixed with athletes, some professional, and I felt like the only time we could see a Black teenager on TV, on the news, was because they were an athlete.
Right.
There are other African-American children out there doing great things who aren't athletes. In the past, I've done a story on a young girl who was an entrepreneur and who had started her own baking business and was giving part of that back to charity. And I just think it's been so nice to see it not just be a personal mission, but now for diversity and inclusion and offering a broader view to our mass audience is more of a corporate initiative now, and something that they're saying we need to be doing as a company, and including people of color, all colors, and also all religions and all sexes on that editorial decision-making team.
Yeah, absolutely. That's well said. And I can kind of see the evolution from the outside looking in that industry. And it's been nice, because like you said, it's more, you know, although I'm an athlete myself, you know, there's so many of people of color who are doing other things outside of sports. And when we talk about diversity and inclusion, most people just assume that we're talking about people of color, but that means opportunities for women as well. So it's great to see so many women out there getting opportunities in that space. But from the outside looking in, you know, most people would see your job as is very glamorous and fun all the time. Is that the case?
No, you know, it's definitely a grind. I always tell people it's much like anyone else's job, right? I'm hard at work from the time I wake up until I go to bed. I think of it this way, because my daughter is always like, you work every holiday. And she doesn't lament about it, because I tell her it's a blessing to be able to go to work. And especially during this time of COVID, when so many people are laid off or furloughed, like, I never cringe at going to work. I didn't before all of this. This is what I wanted all my life, was to be able to get up and go to work and have a purpose and give back. So for me, you know, it's so different in that way. But I think, you know, right now, it's so important for us to be focused in what we're doing, but also have the feeling of wanting to give back, whether it's news or whatever it may be. And, you know, the parts that aren't so glamorous, you know, sure, people see hair and makeup, which I do, by the way, every day. There's not a limo picking me up, you know, this isn't CBS this morning. I'm not Gail King. No one's picking me up in a limo every morning to take me to the studio and doing my hair and makeup. I think that's what a lot of people think when they think of the glamorous side. Sure, I've been on some magazine covers before. People stop and ask for my photo all the time. I've just never thought of it as being famous. And sure, I recognize there are some aspects to it that are glamorous, but it is a grind. It truly is a grind. My job is 24 hours a day. Even when I'm off, I'm not off. You know, we talk about unplugging. I don't unplug. It's my job to be in the know. When I go to the grocery store, people expect me to know. Like, they want a response. And I understand that. You know, it's my job. I anchor the news. I report the news. So for me, I don't really ever turn it off. And maybe that's not so glamorous. And also, when there is something that's catastrophic that happens, I head into work, period. No matter what it is, whether it's a flood, whether it was 9/11, and those are those moments I say that aren't so glamorous, because I think when people think of hunkering down, they think of being at home. You know, with COVID, I've been on air this entire time from the station, and friends and family in the beginning were worried, you know, when we had a lockdown.
Rightfully so.
And I would be like, I'll be fine. This is what I do. When things get bad, this is what I do. You know?
Yeah.
I've had some family joke and say, maybe you should have been a police officer in the military, because you're like, charge.
But you just got to do what you got to do. But it's interesting, because there's two sides to that coin, being in the media and entertaining business. For you personally, what are some perks of being in that industry? And then talk about the other side. What are some of the downsides in that lifestyle?
Well, the perks are definitely being able to have influence, right? So being able to shine a light on areas that are needed. That, to me, has been the greatest perk out of all of this. You know, being able to do stories on Dress for Success Houston and the difference that it's made in so many women's lives, and bring even more attention to that and more donations, and do a documentary on it that I produce. Those are such big perks to me. Basically being able to say, this is really important to me. This is why we should focus on it and bring attention to it, to produce long form content in that way. That's the biggest perk to me, is being able to shine a light. Other perks include, you know, it's tough, because I always say, you know, it's a job. I get paid to do it. So that's it. You know, nothing that anyone would think, once again, that's so glamorous. Like, that's the perk to being able to do it. The other big perk, quite frankly, is I feel like everyone I know, since I'm here in my hometown, they get to keep up with me. So it's like a perk, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that my
for
family
sure.
can turn on the TV and see how I'm doing. You know, sometimes I might crack jokes about, you know, whether it's sports or the weather. They get to see me, because what you see on air is pretty much really what you get in person with me, especially in those moments when I'm bantering with my colleagues, or, you know, coming out of sports. that type of thing.
Yeah. It's like a local sports star plan for the Houston Rockets, I guess. That's a great analogy. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's the greatest thing, right? When you look at Gerald Green, right?
And yeah.
Here in Houston and playing. It's so awesome, I think, for your family. And it's such a source of pride for all of them. I have an uncle who literally texts me twice a week, live while I'm on air. I'll be checking my phone during a commercial break, and he'll just say, I want to say how proud I am of you and how much I love you. And
that's dope.
Huge, huge.
That's perk. So dope.
The downsides to it, I'd say one of the most challenging things is when fans cross the line and they become fanatics and intrude on your space and get too close to you and become a concern. That's the biggest, by far been one of the biggest downsides to me, for sure. And I'm a very open person. When you come up to me, I'll strike a conversation. There's a reason why I think I've excelled in this business, because I do love talking to people and engaging with people. I am a type A super extrovert. I've never been shy. And I like to see people feel good. You know, like people just sometimes want to be talked to. They really do. Like, I can go to a fast food restaurant and a young person will have an attitude and I'll kind of look down at them and smile and be like, aren't you going to smile today? It can't be that bad at work right now. Really?
Makes you know, a difference. So,
for me, I think, you know, when fans have crossed that line, and then also one of the other downsides, but there is an upside to this sometimes too, is talking to people and interviewing people at their darkest and most difficult times. You know, when I was doing general assignments reporting, covering day-to-day stories, and having to go to someone's home who lost a loved one and do a cold knock on their door, that's tough to me, because I know that they are grieving and they are hurting, and to ask them to share that pain with people, it's hard. You know, it's really hard. And I don't take that lightly. And I won't call it a downside, because I've had some people, you know, respectfully decline through the years, but others at the end will say, you know, I felt so much better after talking to you. It was cathartic. So, you know, it's funny, because even the things that may have the downside, I can find an upside too. And I try my best to do that. You know, some people will tell you like, oh my gosh, working holidays and it being a 365 day, 24 hour a year business, that's not a downside to me. I just don't see it that way. You know, once again, I chose to do this.
Exactly.
I know the hours, I know the demand, and I see it as a blessing that I got to do what I wanted to do since being a teenager.
Well, I can attest how here in Houston you are beloved. And, you know, I got an opportunity to meet you. I can't remember when it was. I think it was around like 2011. You came out to, at that time, I was training outside. I have a gym now, but you kind of did a story on training on outdoors with the beak. So that was kind of my introduction to you. But, and over the years, so you've been in this industry for a long time, and you've covered so many different topics, but what are some of your most favorite topics you covered on? And then the other side of it, what's been the most hardest or challenging, which you probably already touched on that, you know, kind of speaking to people after they lost a loved one.
Right. So Drew, I have to tell you, it was really important to do your story when I talked about representation and people seeing us. The Beak family, a diverse family, they were African-American. You were a young African-American business owner, molding and helping shape lives. So to me, it was really important to share your story and let people see a diverse group of people doing great work and aspiring and achieving things. So that was important to me. But getting back to the highs and the lows, what have been the really great big stories and those that have been more challenging? So I like sports. One of the biggest highs is, of course, the World Series with the Astros. I was in LA, there to see it live, witness it. I'm a lifelong Astros fan, being a native Houstonian. my co-anchor and I, who's one of my dear friends, Lynn Cannon, we were jumping for joy. We were just so excited and the energy. And, you know, sports are so universal. I mean, everyone just, it makes us all feel so good.
Yes.
We forget skin color. We forget all these things. And it just felt so good for us not to just be there, but win. Other highlights have been two Super Bowls. Because this is, you know, it's big news and it's happy news and everyone feels so good. So the Super Bowls, those definitely have been my highlights. Mm-hmm. You know, some other highlights have been, I've been on the anchor desk for when President Obama was first elected. So elections are always a big deal to me too, because it, at a younger age, I really saw that as the sports of news. You know, you have all these different elections going on, matches per se, if we're going to relate it to sports, and you've got to digest all of that, analyze it, and then communicate it to the audience. So whenever there's an election, even this past election with all of its interesting nuances, that's always really exciting to me as well. Yeah. Covering entertainment for a number of years because it just presented opportunities to travel the world and to meet so many great actors and actresses, singers, songwriters, you name it. That to me was really magical, that time in my career. Those are all of the highlights. You know, the tougher, more challenging stories definitely Hurricane Katrina, when they brought the first evacuees to the Astrodome. I was one of the first reporters there when people were first coming off the buses. And I'll never forget, people looked so distraught. They were crying. Throughout that day, people were walking up to me because I, you know, had a microphone and I was with a photographer. And grown men were crying, saying they were missing family members. Man,
wow.
And these were people who looked like my family members. And my dad raised me to be a tough lady, right? To always be able to hang with the fellas. And I remember that moment, like, don't you cry, don't you cry. Like, pull it together. People need you to be strong and trying to offer people help. And it was just, it was so challenging because of the enormity of it, the emotion involved in it. And then that first night, I had to do reports for several of the stations within our station group. So not just Houston, we were being broadcast in Indianapolis. We were being broadcast in various cities in Florida, all across the country. And so it was really challenging just to be able to take all of that in that had happened over the course of that time and relay the stories, do them justice, and let people see the emotion that I had experienced. That was really challenging. No doubt the biggest challenge was Harvey. My colleague and I were on air, I want to say like 137 hours, like with minimal, like with a couple of hours to sleep here and a couple of hours to sleep there. We had to evacuate our station after it flooded. That was, you know, when things are happening, like I knew it was bad, but when I look back now, I'm like, oh my gosh, it was unbelievable wading through flood water and carrying our things and not even knowing where we were gonna go. I'd never worked in TV before where we had lost a signal at such an important time. And I knew like we would find a way. But that was challenging. But even more so than that, you know, watching the city that I love be in such peril during Harvey. My phone was blowing up with family and friends I hadn't heard from in years, like worried and scared for themselves, asking me, should I evacuate? I remember taking viewers' calls live on air. A woman telling me, like, the water is rising in my house. I don't know how to swim. My children don't know how to swim. Oh. Where should I go? What should I do? I'm calling 911. I took call after call like that. And it was really challenging. And the whole time I kept telling myself, like, you must remain calm. These people are scared to death. If you called someone needing help, you would need them to be able to be calm, to share your story so hopefully someone would come to your rescue, and also to help you just be okay in that moment. I think about myself with my child, like whenever we've had something go down, I'm always like, okay, you gotta keep your stuff together for your kid. Like, I don't matter how, it doesn't matter how crazy it is. And so I just felt that through Harvey, but it was so hard to watch. And of course, you know, I was tired. Like people would say, oh my God, you must've been so tired. Someone said, man, when you put your hair back on a ponytail live on the anchor desk, I knew like, man, it must be rough, which I thought was so funny in the moment because it was something I didn't even think about. But there really was so much going on there and so many people struggling. But at the same time, like I said, I always try and find the light, the positive side of it. I saw so many people do such good for so many people who didn't look like them, who didn't come from the same place as them. And that was the upside to it. But definitely, you know, those storms really were the most challenging to witness and watch and be a human, and then to report it as well. Because, you know, you've got deadlines to meet for on air, but when someone is saying, I don't know where my wife and child are outside the Astrodome, can you please help me? It's like, okay, we'll get to reporting in a second. All right, sir, let's walk over here. I'll walk with you. I think there are people who are trying to help locate people and bring them back together. You know, there's something to be said for that. I think you're always a better journalist first. You're always a better anything when you're a human first.
Right, exactly. Emmy Award winner. What did that feel like?
Oh boy.
I mean, so that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I said I'm competitive. So, you know, much through my career, I've always been striving for some type of accolade, especially when I was younger. I just wanted an Emmy. Like, I was never greedy. I'm like, just one. If I can just get one, I'll be satisfied. And the first one I won, I'm not a big crier. Like, I'm not, you know, like I said, a tough girl, all that. I boo-hooed like a baby.
Too right. Right. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And so I think too, it was like, oh my gosh, mom and dad are going to be so proud to, you know, I think I've always been that person. Like, I've always wanted my parents to be proud, especially my father, because my father sacrificed so much. My father did not attend college. And he's the smartest man that I know. He went into the military and he worked, and he always worked really hard. And he's always been my biggest teacher, my biggest advocate. And then I was blessed to marry a man who's the same. And my father was also a critic, like could be very honest with me. My mother especially, you know, could tell me my flaws. But when I won that Emmy, it was pretty sweet. And then I went on to win a couple more, and I've been nominated for a number of them. And the best ones have always been all three that I have were from content that I produced. I just didn't anchor it. I wasn't essentially the face for it. I produced.
Even sweeter.
I made the decisions, right. So for me, that was really, really special. And the people that I worked with those projects and won those awards along with, also dearest friends, you know, and just stars themselves. So that made it even sweeter.
That is truly amazing. And for your fans out there, aside from the work, community service and volunteering that you do, what are your hobbies? What do you like to do in your spare time?
So I like to get out and run. I'll go walking, mostly running though. I like to do that. One of our security guards at the station's like, man, you'll see me, and then she's gone. So I like to work out. I like to get on my spin bike. I like to get on the treadmill. I also love to go to the beach. I love to paddleboard. I love to play tennis at the beach. I love to play paddleball. You know, my husband jokes, I think I'm like Serena Williams when I'm out there on the beach playing paddleball. So I love to go to the lake. I love to spend time on the water and outside. I love to be out back by the pool. Like, that's what I do during these winter months. Like, in a minute here, I'm going to get out and I'll go running with my dog. But I just like to be moving. There's something about when I'm moving, I'm having a good time. And if it's not that, then I like having dinner with my closest friends or like family, and they've been my friends for years.
Yeah.
And so we'll do dinner together, we'll laugh, we'll joke, we'll listen to old school music. We love some 80s and 90s R&B.
Come on now.
But most
importantly, you're just a normal person who like to do normal things, which a lot of times when your face is on a television, it's hard for fans or people to kind of envision that you do normal, regular stuff. So that's great to hear. But if you can go back and speak to a younger Mia, what advice would you give yourself?
Stay focused, stay determined, continue to work hard. Always, always bring the best attitude. Always be an independent thinker. Always.
I like that.
Yes, because what others think are best for you isn't always the best. Trust and embrace your circle, your cheerleaders. I've always said that I have amazing cheerleaders. Cheerleaders who are also strong critics. So my parents have always been that. My husband is that. My husband is not the type like, oh, honey, you did such a fantastic, amazing job. You know, it'll be like, let me dab you up. And hey, next time, maybe do this. And,
I can relate.
Yeah. And we raise our daughter the same way. And I just think, you know, it's about being a realist. But I would just tell my younger self to stay the course, because I had those attributes early on. And I think that's what's seen me through life thus far. Nowhere near a perfect life at all. No one's is.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing our young people need to realize, like with Instagram and everything, no one's life is perfect.
Exactly. People show you what they want to show you.
Yeah. Well, because even for myself, like personally, I don't post a whole lot, but I don't want to ever post anything that makes someone feel bad. Like, I just feel like everybody's lives are hard enough. So you're not really getting to see, you know, the full glimpse. I'm not posting that, you know, my father is struggling with dementia, because I just don't, you know, I don't want someone to be saddened by that. And so I think young people need to realize that everyone has challenges. No one's life is perfect.
Absolutely. So what's next for you?
You know, I'm just going to keep on keeping on right now.
Oh, girl.
I'm at a station that I love. I always wanted to be a main anchor in my hometown. So I'm living out my goals and dreams here. You know, I'm trying to build more on the good work that's being done at the charitable organizations that I'm very close to, Dress for Success Houston in particular. I've been a volunteer there since 2000. Wow. So it's been a huge part of my life, the women who've grown there. So just trying to expand on what I've been able to do there already and do even more for the people at Dress for Success Houston, and just keep telling Houston stories and making Houston proud as well, keeping us informed and, when appropriate, entertained.
Keep doing what you're doing. And finally, when you're in hair and makeup or you're about to hit that path for a run, what's on your playlist?
It's an eclectic mix, right? So I love Janet Jackson. Remember I said 80s and 90s?
Yeah, I'm with that.
Yeah, R&B. A little Drake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Champagne Poppy.
Yeah. And Jennifer Lopez. I've always been a J-Lo fan. So there's a lot of Jennifer Lopez. There's some Beyonce on there.
People who make you move. Beyonce, J-Lo, like they make you move.
Make me move and make me feel good.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, I want, you know, stuff that's going to make me feel good as well. And there's an artist named Jess Glenn. She's been around for a minute. I like her. It's upbeat. It's inspiring. as well too.
That's what I like to hear. Well, Mia, this has been fun. It's been so inspiring for myself, and I'm pretty sure for our listeners out there. So we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come and share your story and your journey. So thank you for coming to 21.
Thank you. It's been wonderful, Drew. Take care.
Will do. Evening news anchor, Mia Gradney.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. To the athletes, keep being the best you can be. Run your race with excellence. To the parents of athletes, let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and the stewards that we are supposed to be. To everyone, be willing to share your experiences to help others along their paths, and always be open to the wisdom that comes your way.
For more information about the 21 Podcast, 21 Media, and services provided by Train Harder 21, visit the website at drewlasker.com and follow us across all social media platforms. Remember to add this podcast to your playlist, subscribe, rate, and review. Until next episode of 21, Train Harder.